Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
How sweet it is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. And Ken, yesterday I had lunch down at one of the very hip sections, the short north of Columbus, Ohio, in a cafe named Forno that was just popping with young people. And I saw so many slick chicks in there, I almost wanted to turn around and go back, since I knew what we were doing today, called Forbidden Fruits.
This movie has a little something for everybody. So I am a huge fan of the writer Daniel Waters, who wrote scripts back in the 80s. He did Heathers. He did Batman Returns with Michelle Pfeiffer. He did Hudson Hawk, a movie that very few people want to talk about, was a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
And I loved his quirky sense of comedy, his way of talking about making social commentaries at the same time being funny about it. And that's what this director is trying to do with Forbidden Fruits. Forbidden Fruits is filled with pop references, as you have these three scantily clad queens of the mall working at this very exclusive fashion shop who happen to be witches.
Well, they pretend to be witches, let's say. We don't know that for sure, right?
Well, bad things happen when they pass hexes, and you kind of get the impression that they're trying to imply that there is something to what's going on. It's not Witches of Eastwick, but it is a good attempt at depicting the witches. It just doesn't stay the course on that. It kind of drifts in various different directions. It wanders a bit. But as a pop culture reference film filled with lots and lots of fun comic moments, it succeeds.
And I think we may have even forgotten the importance of malls in American history. There was a time when the malls were our culture.
70s, 80s, malls were everything. And we had a lot of good movies that were about malls, and we've kind of forgotten them because we don't see them much anymore.
Yeah.
Most of the time when somebody does a movie about a mall, they're depicting it in the 70s or the 80s, like Licorice Pizza a couple of years ago, set in the 1980s. This movie is depicting it today. And it does a very good job of this. I was really happy to see somebody take on the malls of the 21st century as a setting for this. I'm not going to say it's a horror film. I'm going to say it's a very kinky, quirky black comedy.
Well, it does descend into some pretty bloody business.
Towards the end,
it really lets go. And I think you're right. It's not really important whether they truly are witches or not. They act like them.
They act like them.
and I'll tell you the one, there are some things in here that are truly astonishing, even though for me, it's not a film I would go back to. I'm still interested in itself as a cultural. When they drink from that big boot. I think that is one of the grossest.
We don't know what they're drinking,
Know the girls kind of take off their panties.
Yeah.
And they squeeze them so they can get whatever juice they can get out of it, and then they put it in the boot.
Oh, we went there.
When you're thinking about creative new ways of grossing out, I thought I saw everything, but that to me was just
that's one of the kinky elements about this. To me, this movie was not so much gross as it was very, very kinky. way the girls dress, there is a fair amount of nudity in this movie too. This movie's got a little bit for everybody. This is not a bad date night movie, because the women are going to get one thing about it, about the empowerment of the women characters and the way that they have the women bonding. It's a very sapphic film, but at the same time, the guys are going to have a lot of eyeball candy in this movie, too. It succeeds on a lot of levels, but the area where it succeeds the best, these four characters are very well defined. I really like the way that the director and the cast gave these four characters four distinct personalities. They have four distinct backstories. And the movie spends a lot of its time exploring the four women. It goes in four different directions, and it can be a little wandering at times, interchangeable. Each one has a very unique identity, and the cast does a great job. All four of these girls actually remind me of young Jenny Ortega's, back when she was doing Triple X with Mia Goth, the few films that she did right after that when she was defining herself. Very, very good acting from four unknowns, and they did a great job with this.
Well, director... Alloway and writer Houghton, Lily Houghton, have an attempt to universalize it by giving them just names of fruits.
Yes. Yeah, we've got pumpkin, apple, cherry, and fig.
Right. And you're making me think above that, each one has an individual role to play.
Yes. Well, the story is the come together of the four individual stories. They have rules in the coven that they're supposed to be following.
Even to what time they can make love.
Well, they're not supposed to even be dating, and when they're texting boys, they're supposed to use emojis only. But, of course, one of them is breaking that rule. Then we find out another one is breaking that rule. Then it comes down to a surprise ending where two of them end up in a life-and-death battle with each other. It has elements of horror films, slasher horror films involving women. It has elements of women bonding. It has elements of Witches of Eastwick, a little bit of Heather's thrown in there for good measure. Well, actually, a lot of Mean Girls. So if you like Mean Girls, you liked Heather's, you liked Witches of Eastwick, pour it all together, mix it up, and you get this movie.
I don't think that it regenerates Tina Fey as well. I thought that there was... That the humor is not there.
The humor is not over the top, and it's more pop culture references, more like Minecraft.
There's also something so universal about this. From my experience, and I've taught middle school, so I know these ladies can be like. And there's a hierarchy there that transcends even being witches.
We see that in the opening scene. It's set in the mall food court. The people working in the mall are sitting in the food court, very Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Then you have these three women that come out of Pure Eden, the most exclusive store to work in. Nobody can get a job there because these three women run it. And they come out, and they're in their very, very naughty little outfits. Naughty is a good word to use for this movie, by the way, John. They come out in their outfits.
Yeah, it is a good word.
And they walk up to their restaurants, and they're handed their food without charge. Always the same thing. It's all ready for them, and they eat uniformly, except one of the three is eating something different, but the other two are eating exactly the same thing. And you see this kind of scene a lot in movies set in schools, where you've got two or three women in the school who are running the school, and they're to sit at their table, it would be everything. And we saw a little of that with the recent movie Slanted, where you had the clique of the top girls all hanging out together, all eating the same thing, because that's what the number one girl eats.
Times have changed enough that back in the old days where you had the jocks also as powerhouses.
Yeah.
No jocks in this
movie. No, this movie is really all about the women.
Oh,
what few men are in it are playing comedic roles. Or being taken advantage of by the women in the mall. But it was so refreshing to me, John, to see the mall used almost as a character. It's been so long since we've seen shopping malls being the setting and the defining thing that brings everybody together. Usually that doesn't happen anymore because malls are dying. No, this film uses the mall, today's mall, not 1980s or 70s mall, but today's mall, to very, very good effect, better than I've seen anybody else do it.
And what I'm trying to understand is that, you know, what has taken the place of the malls? This was such a perfect venue for young women, for instance. Not only could they exercise their hierarchy, they could also be capitalists at the same time. So it seemed like a pretty comprehensive place to meet. So what's happened?
For script writers, what's replaced the mall is setting the movies in high schools. So instead of setting the movie in the mall like we did with Fast Times at Ridgemont High, we're now setting those scenes exclusively in the high schools. Fast Time had its moments in the high school too, but because the director, Amy, wanted to have all of the kids in her movie had to have a job. She didn't want to depict kids who were independently wealthy. She wanted to show the reality of kids working in a shopping mall, trying to earn money for their dates on the weekends, which was the reality of the early 1980s. That's how we all lived. We worked in some minimum wage job, so we had money to spend on the weekends, and she wanted to exploit that, which was not in Cameron Crowe's original novel. But it made that movie so realistic to those of us who were 18, 19, in 1982, really could get a grasp of that because we could see ourselves in that movie. So what's happened since the decline of the malls is now we're going back to the high schools as the setting for these interplays, these relationships, these little competitions. This movie doesn't because it's decided it wants to do this witch thing. It wants to do this coven. And so it can get away with that by setting it in the shopping mall and having these girls be isolated in just this one store. So the setting works well this time for this kind of script.
Also convenient that witch and bitch are poetically tied together.
Their chance. Yeah. Yes, they had their chance.
Let me suggest something that has taken its place has and does not appear in this film, strangely enough, is social media.
Well, it touches upon it like you can only use emojis when texting. You can't use, and there's a list of social media they can't use. And then towards the end, there's some references to things that they found on Facebook and so on. But no, this movie doesn't indulge itself
in social
media. But don't you think
that Facebook has taken the place of the mall? I mean, I'm just trying to think about our analogy.
To some extent, Facebook has actually become more of a thing for people 40 and older.
I know.
Younger people are doing completely different stuff.
What
now.
Are they doing? Instagram?
They're doing Instagram. They're doing Grindr. They're doing a few other things. Give this movie credit for staying clear of social media because social media doesn't depict well in movies. It's going to get boring real fast if all you're doing. And I've seen movies trying to do this where everybody's sitting in their car texting one another.
Yes, right.
You know what? That gets old real fast. This movie is all about face-to-face contacts, people interacting in person, and I like that so much more.
K.G. Klein, the film is Forbidden Fruit. If you want to hear more, you'll have to go to Podcast Experience, and this would be Back Talk. So what do you advise?
Great date movie. You're looking for a good weekend date movie where everybody's going to be happy. Oh, yeah, this is the one. Have fun. Laugh at it. Most of the people that were laughing the hardest in my theater were about 20 years old or less.
Not only do I enjoy always colloquies about movies, I do enjoy the fact that I think you could tackle this one, a little bit of a puzzle for me, and elucidate it because of the film. Forbidden Fruit, Garden of Eden. What's the motif here? What are they trying to make out of this?
Well, what they're dealing with, and it's based loosely on a play, is the idea that mankind fell out of grace with God because of women and the apple, and there's this stigma associated with women that they were what caused sin.
Are you denying that?
Yeah, I'm denying that. Of course, I'm Jewish, so we take this with a bit of. And I'll tell you, you don't mess with Jewish women. They'll put you in your place very, very quickly. With this film, it jump starts with that, with the idea that women are the cause of sin, and it says, let's have some fun with this. Let's not take this too seriously, and let's take it to some extremes. So you've got these three women who, at the start of the movie, working in this very exclusive shop, who are witches, who own and run this mall. They are the mean girls of the mall. And they are very, very hip, and they're very, very beautiful. They dress very provocatively.
And I love the way they photograph Lily, because not only is she's just as hot as hell, and they'll do some low-angle shots that will just emphasize her being
Dressed in ways that most malls wouldn't let women come in dressed like. But,
they wouldn't. They're not terribly revealing. They're all busty in one way or the other, but they just are so
they're
provocative.
They're just hot. They're smoking hot.
I know. They are the downfall of all these young men.
And I think that is a way of empowering women above this concept of original sin.
Yes.
And saying, okay, well, if women are so sinful, then let's take this and have some fun with it.
One part of this whole analogy that interests me is, and I would like to know what you think about it. Where is Satan in this?
Well, he's referenced, but he's referenced in very funny ways. You get the impression that these girls, as far as being witches, are real amateurs. So they like to use names. They like to name drop.
That's
and Satan
one.
Is one of the names that they name drop. But in reality, is there any sense of real Christian religion in this, or any real sense of witchcraft in this? Absolutely not. This is all pure fantasy from the minds of a couple of 20-year-old girls who are using this coven concept to hold and control one another, with, of course, the top dog, Apple, using the rules of the coven to maintain control over the other girls.
And, of course, her name suggesting the Garden of Eden.
Suggesting the Garden of Eden, yes.
That works well for me, and I like that attempt to get a little bit farther than just the glitz, because after all, these costumes are out of this world.
The costumes in this are terrific. Such a low-budget film, it was costumed very nicely.
There are people who believe that the costumes are an actual character in this.
It does a good job of defining the characters, that these are women who dress nothing like anybody else in the mall dresses, and that sets them apart, but it also makes them better. And you have to kind of wonder, well, why isn't everybody in the mall dressing like this? Well, it's because these are the three hot ones, and then, of course, the fourth one. Now, the movie has issues. I mean, there's some continuity problem. At the beginning of the movie, the fourth girl is working for a pretzel factory. Then she joins...
Pumpkin.
And then she joins the group. She's invited in. Partly because her name is Pumpkin, then she dresses like the rest of them. However, like halfway through the movie, she shows up in her pretzel outfit. And you get the impression, well, somebody was not paying attention when they were editing, or they decided this is a really good scene. We got to stick it in somewhere.
Yeah.
So the movie's got issues. It's a first-time director. It's a low-budget movie, places where it runs a little long, and it wanders in those four different stories a bit too much. Those four stories go four different directions. A little too much, but overall, the fun part of the movie is how hip it is, how much it's filled with pop culture, and how funny those moments can be, especially for younger people in the audience who really could tap into what these girls are talking about and get a kick out of it.
And I also thought that in some way, Pumpkin might have been the serpent in her own way, because she instills some doubt, even in Apple. I think Apple has a difficulty coming to terms with her. I'm trying to maybe make more out of the analogy than is there.
There are other movies that have tried this four young women routine. A Spring Breakers that came out about 10 years ago started out with four young women, and you had the two who were very hot and very sexualized, and you also had the one that was a virgin and along for the ride and just happy to be there.
Yeah.
And that same thing plays out here. You almost could have taken these characters right out of Spring Breakers.
I think there's a lot of stock character.
Yeah, but they do a good job with this of defining these characters and developing them. Yeah, much better than Spring Breakers did.
All right, you've done a terrific job with The Garden of Eden. So I'm going to ask you for another one that may be even easier, another underlying motif here, Darwin.
The idea of evolution?
Yeah. Survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah, I think it may even have been mentioned once, Darwinian, but it's coming to my mind.
It may be touched upon a little bit. This film plays into the classic slasher motif of there's going to be the final girl, there's going to be the one that lasts until the end.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you whether it keeps with that or if it breaks with it, but there is the one girl of the four who's the virgin, who you would normally expect to be the survivor at the end. She's the one that usually in horror films makes it through. But again, this movie, everything's up for grabs, and it doesn't necessarily like to follow standard horror routines because it doesn't want to be a horror film.
In some horror films, you have the presence of parents and adults, and you really don't have that here.
No, you don't. Well, typically in these films, you don't. Spring Breakers, you didn't. Heathers, you certainly didn't. You have teachers. But again, if you look at Fast Times at Ridgemont High, what made that movie such a success was the very few adults. You had Ben Stein, and you had the classic teachers. And you also had this in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I was going to say Bueller, Ferris Bueller.
Bueller.
He's on his own.
Yeah. But you had this, Mr. Hand. Who can forget Sean Penn sitting in the classroom having the pizza delivered to him? Hey, Mr. Hand. And this movie doesn't want to bring the adults in, because when you bring adults in into a highly sexualized teen environment, it creates some awkwardness.
It is.
So they eliminate the adults other than serving as foils for their attempts to make money.
Yeah.
They're the victims of the scams that the kids are portraying. I do want to touch a little bit about some other mall movies that we've been talking a little bit about.
Not that. Paul Blart and the cop in the mall. I'm just thinking.
Oh, Mall really Cop. Mall Cop. That was another. I forgot about that one. Well, the first movie to really use a mall as a location was Logan's Run in 1976, which was filmed in a shopping center in Fort Worth, Texas, and used it to great effect because it created this futuristic world within the domes, and they just happened to find this shopping center that looked like the 23rd century, or at least what the 23rd century was going to look like in 1976. But then the king of all mall movies still has to be Dawn of the Dead. Set in Monroeville Mall in Pittsburgh, beloved George Romero. And it used the mall as a way to comment on consumerism and make fun of the idea that we are so dependent upon buying things and needing to be out shopping that even as zombies, we descend upon the mall because it's important to us. It's such a great political
thing. They ratchet it up in Forbidden Fruits because these girls can con adults into buying stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're
they should never buy.
They're putting a scarf on this woman. They know she has money. And then they stick a $400 price tag on what probably had a $30 price tag on it. And then they cash it in. And you know that they're taking the difference and pocketing it every night. They have people walking out of there spending $2,200 on probably $400 worth of clothing. And that goes in their pockets at the end. That's their tips to themselves.
That's one part that I enjoyed about this. Is
the way they're taking advantage of
materialism and capitalism.
Yes. Yeah.
And what better place in the mall?
What better place in the mall? But then after Dawn of the Dead, the next movie set in the mall was, of course, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah.
And it does such a great job because the mall was the lifestyle. In 1982, if you were 18, you were 17, you were living at the mall. I was living at the mall playing arcade games. Mm-hmm. You could find me at the arcade in Pittsburgh at one of the many malls all the time, not buying anything, but just popping quarters into the machines. And that's where you love to hang out and be seen with everybody else. And you know what? It wasn't just me. It was all the other crew members from the George Romero movies would be popping in the mall as well. I'd see Tom Savini. We even had Stephen King come along with us to the mall one time. And I'm surprised he didn't write a book set in a shopping mall because you could see the little wheels in his head turning as we were walking. I forget which mall it was. It was one of the malls in Pittsburgh.
That's the time when I brought my kids here and I had a couple of my daughters. And you bet we lived in Worthington, so I've forgotten the name of that mall.
Well, you had Worthington Mall and you also had Northland.
There were a couple of opportunities, but that's what there was all there was here mm-hmm. For those girls, and I was happy for it. The social milieu.
There was a period in the late 70s and through the 80s when teens were defined more by the mall they hung out with in than they were by the school they went to.
When if you think about even in our fastest growing city in the country, 13th or 14th largest city in the country, there really wasn't anything going on. So if we did not have those malls, I don't know what we would have done. And we're always afraid as adults, always afraid of what was going on, always afraid to let them go. And yet nothing ever happened.
Nothing ever happened.
But it was if I had been a teen, it'd been where I'd want to go to. I'd want to hang out there.
Most of the guys I know who grew up in the 80s met their wives in the shopping mall. Either they were working in the mall and met their wives working in the mall, or they met at the mall and started dating. It was the center, not the high school, the shopping mall was the center of life for teens. And again, if you want to see the perfect movie to talk about this, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and then the unofficial sequel to Fast Times, which is Licorice Pizza, that came out a couple years ago. With Philip Seymour Hoffman's son was in that movie.
Oh my gosh.
And did a great job. And I expected a lot more to come from him after that movie, but we haven't really seen much of him since then. But yeah, Licorice Pizza, another great film at depicting malls. And then, you know, you get a little bit of malls if you're watching the old Buffy the Vampire Slayer episodes because they were centered upon pop culture and life in the 90s. And early 2000s. But now, you know, mall movies are very, very few and far between. And that's one of the reasons why I really give a lot of credit to Forbidden Fruits, to trying to revive that and do it contemporary. They're not doing this. And they could have easily set this movie in 1981 in the mall. But I don't think they had the budget to completely redo a mall. And you get some hints that maybe this movie was on such a tight budget that they had ideas they couldn't afford. Mm. There's a suggested tornado scene at the end that never comes to fruition. Mm. Probably was in the script, ran out of money.
Well, K.G. Klein, we've done an amazing job of resuscitating the mall, even though it's definitely sliding into the past in our culture.
Sadly.
Yeah. So what do you suggest about this Forbidden Fruits?
Oh, I think this is going to become a cult classic. I really do. I think this is going to be another film like Licorice Pizza that's going to resonate with certain people, and it's going to be one of the DVDs on their shelf, or it's going to be something that's going to be on their laptop. For a first-time film, yes, it's got its misses. It's got its missteps. But overall, I was very, very happy with this, and I think this director's got a good good future ahead of her.
And I would like to say that some people know that we're broadcasting out of Columbus, Ohio. And I think that the Easton Mall is still thriving.
Easton is thriving, not so much as, a little bit as a venue for retail, but especially after 9 o'clock, that place is packed full of groups hanging out.
Okay.
And that's why you do see a lot of security there.
And they do have a good security
system.
They do
have a very good security staff. It still has one of the best theaters in the city of Columbus.
The AMC
AMC 24 Theater is a great place to go to see movies. But yeah, sadly, Northland's gone, of course. That was
Eastland.
My mall. Eastland, Westland, all gone. Lane Avenue, sadly, was a great indoor mall in the day. Yeah. When I moved here in the 80s, Lane Avenue was the queen. It wasn't big, but it was the queen. Christmas time, you had the carolers and the horse-drawn carriages out in the parking lot, and everything was decorated and beautiful, and now it's just a strip mall. I was so sad to see them.
Is Tuttle Mall still in business?
Tuttle Mall is still in business. You can still go in there. There's not much in there. It's another sign of decline, but you know what? There's nothing unique about that to Columbus. That's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in Pittsburgh, my big hangout was Century 3 Mall, great mall, beautiful mall, very Logan's Run-like inside. It's been torn down.
Well, around the corner for me, there was a very nice mall, downtown Columbus.
And then now we have the Columbus Commons, where it once stood.
Yes, and I'm happy for that substitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have concerts there now and stuff.
Yeah,
and they built that mall at a time when malls were already starting to go into decline, and we really did not need that additional retail space in downtown Columbus, so it lasted a relatively short time.
I would have liked it around the corner for me, particularly because of that
City
unique
Center.
Design.
City Center Mall.
Thank you, because of the, it actually, Wexner took his toys and went out to
Polaris.
Easton.
Yeah, Polaris. Well, he went out to Easton and then Polaris. Yeah. And Polaris is still doing okay.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a little bit in decline, too. A lot of the shops are more focused to certain very niche markets.
Yes, right.
Yeah. But Easton is still doing well. I mean, if you want to go to Tiffany's, you want to go to Gucci, you want to go to Coach, Easton has still got all of that.
Okay, that's it for Forbidden Fruits. And the heck with these women that have taken us and put us down, particularly of these slick chicks. It's really a cute way of looking at the teen years.
It is, and it's a great way of depicting this sapphic relationship between these women. One of the four girls at one point says, I don't believe in levels in women relationships. And however that. And it really does a nice job of bringing these four characters together in a way that plays off one another very naturally and defines each of the characters.
And, of course, how ironic it is, two of these old guys talking about this movie. We certainly should have had some younger women here. And typical of these guys to bring in Sappho.
If I was this director, I'd be happy about anybody talking about this movie because it's a small budget. It could have ended up going straight to video. It got a theatrical release, and it's actually doing pretty well. Critics are liking this movie all across the country.